J10, number 8B.
Yes, therefore, as I was saying, that we can see then that it's a blending of qualities that are important, and in any relationship, whether it's in a relationship in a human marriage or what have you, that's what's brought out in that chapter, or in business, that's a marriage of relationships when we go to the office. It's a marriage of relationships when we just go to a grocery store. It's a marriage of relationships when we're in our car waiting at the stoplight, not wanting to be the first out of the gate, so to speak, and honk at the other because they're a little slower. Often, waiting at a stoplight, the person behind us doesn't even give us a chance to see that the light changed from red to green. They're on the horn immediately, a little clever in anticipating the change, you see. So it's a marriage of relationships wherever we are, in any circumstance, whether it's on the Los Angeles freeway, which is notorious for not nice behavior on the freeway occasionally, or any other freeway in the United States. Courtesy or these values of relationships certainly come out. So it's a marriage of qualities. But it shows there that if one enters into a human marriage, that it's on higher values, and that wants to raise the family on higher values, to teach the children higher values, so they go out with a higher system of reference. It's a gentle emergence into finally the child asks the parents, does man create man or does God create man? It isn't answered. She just goes right on into the next chapter of Christian Science versus Spiritualism, which answers itself and says, well, there's only the science of spirit, God, of the one-valued logic that doesn't break itself up, and that therefore it's only spiritualism, the second record of creation, and therefore we are to really ultimately adhere to the spiritual origin of man as the image and likeness of God, where nothing needs to be created. Creation is intact. But that's a gentle emerging. So we see that with Creator here, how it gives that sense that the divine mind's creation is intact, and that it gives the high, lofty goal of that, but allows us to evolve always towards that goal. But at least we see it and we love it. And Jesus knew that the divine mind was his origin, not of a human origin. All right, now let's just go on and concept build another point here. I'll just do a few just so we get in the rhythm. Then producer. The definitions of creator and create mention the closely associated idea produce. Mrs. Eddy actually uses the idea to illustrate mind. In Merriam-Webster, produce means to cause to be or to happen, to originate, to bring about. Or in Annandale Dictionary, to cause, effect, bring about, to make, to bring into being, or form. Or in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy shows that mind is the producer. Mind reproduces all. Man in the universe are the products. Mind produces its own model of excellence. Mind produces in man health, harmony, and immortality. Mind produces all action. Mind can produce nothing unlike God. So here we have the terms creator and producer. Now, we in our concept building, we would say to ourselves, these terms are synonymous. Therefore, we see that creator and producer are interchangeable. But we talk to ourselves in our ideas. Said, we don't just read this and say, well, I've read all through this and now I've done the work. You see, we always want to say to ourselves, what does it mean? Now, we've got two ideas here, creator and producer. Instead of going right on to the parent mind, we look back and say, all right, we see similarities between producer and creator, don't we? Each one talks about to create, to bring into being. Now, what's the difference between a producer and creator? Because there's got to be a sense of difference, or we don't need the word creator, or we wouldn't need the word producer. Either we'd use producer or we'd use creator. Is there a difference between a creator and producer? Because the Tsunami principle reaches all the way down to the ideas. So this is, we've got to drill ourselves in meaning, and this is important. What is the difference? Good. So Dave is saying he used the Socratic method on himself. He wasn't happy and closed the book. He put it in sentences, and that's very, very good. He used creator. He said, where would I use the term creator? Well, I would use it, for example, with Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo. Leonardo da Vinci was the originator or creator of a composition, whereas you wouldn't say that a farmer created a cabbage. Seems like a farmer brings about the produce. He helps in producing the produce for market. Good. Any other observations? All right. So Dick is saying, all right. So we say, all right. Now the method is to talk it out amongst ourselves, our consciousness, talk out what it means, huh? And Dave said that quite rightly. He questioned and asked himself, and it's very important, as Dave says, to put these things into sentences and don't leave them. Dick is saying, all right, I take a look at the concept of creator, and I want to see that there is something between the difference of creator and producer. So let's look at it. First of all, we would say, well, yes, that God is a grand creator, that God creates something. It's the origin. And then Mrs. Eddy says that God is a creator, but the producer just adds another step to creator, doesn't it? That divine mind is the creator, but she says, and man and the universe are the product, huh? And so she's saying that, as Dick's saying, that you can in one way look at creator as, well, the divine mind is a creator, but it could be the latent possibility or power to create. It may be that the divine mind is a creator, but the divine mind didn't bring forth a product, you see. But the divine mind not only is a creator, but the divine mind also is a producer. It produces something. It produces the product. And man and the universe are that product, huh? So they say often, like many students have said, they like to look at it like with the film industry, that the artist created maybe a manuscript and that the producer brought it forward. He produced the manuscript for film, you see. So you have the script writer there and then the producer. He brings it forth, the script, as a product. So you can think of it as the creative act as being latent, and that it brings forth a product. Man and the universe are the product. Good. And then that definition of creator, if we looked at it, it has two definitions there. One, it means to produce from nothing, to bring into being, to cause to exist. Do we like that definition, to produce from nothing, from what we know as Christian Science, not as science? It doesn't seem to ring clear. And it's not ringing so clear to the physical scientists or the theoretical physicists, because they're now asking, they don't want to know what went on after the Big Bang. We know they asked for the source and origin, what went before the Big Bang. They don't like out of nothing comes something either for creator. They want to know there was something before the Big Bang, because you can't have out of nothing come something. So this definition here seems to be quite good by Funk and Wagnall, that to create means to produce as a new construction out of existing materials. Therefore, the materials exist, and that the act of creativity is just seeing the rearranging of materials that exist, like a kaleidoscope. The little glass pieces in a kaleidoscope exist, but it's our constantly restructuring of that kaleidoscope brings forth something new. That would be the creative act. And that actually, in the science order of the science vertical, at the point of Christian Science, where we see the science order, it shows that that is that higher law of creativity, where we get soul and life, the numerals of infinity, spirit and truth begin to restructure themselves. A mind and love that bring out forms would already exist in the pattern of mind and the plan of love. It's that restructuring of elements that exist, which is a higher sense of creativity. Look at what we've already seen in concept building between creator and producer, how necessary this is, and that we get the spiritual meaning of it by going through the compendium and not our pedestrian schoolgirl, schoolboy meaning of these terms. One has to do it because we see, we question ourselves about creator and producer, but we have to do this with all the ideas to get their spiritual meaning, because as we use these ideas in the system of references, when we work with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we're alluding to their spiritual meaning, not their human meaning. And we presuppose that everyone in advanced classes has done the compendium work, and they know what it means that mind is the creator and what it means to create in its spiritual meaning. So this work is invaluable. We must do it, Dick.
Yeah, the example you gave of the kaleidoscope.
Yes.
Is an excellent example of system and structure.
Yes.
Because the system is in the kaleidoscope, the little pieces of glass. Every time it's moved, we get a different structure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's a newness.
That's restructuring.
Yes, and that's creative, because you always get something new. That's right. It's that law of creativity seen from a higher standpoint.
Out of something that already exists.
Yeah, that's that. It shows a higher law of creativity. That's, as I say, when we look at the science order, we consider it the higher law of creativity than just bringing forth something that looked like it wasn't there and came forward. Mm-hmm. All right, so then, of course, we love the point on the parent mind. I think I'll read it just because I just love it, because it's so important to see that the divine mind is our parent mind. We just don't realize it, because it's what's guiding and leading us all day long, and that when we work through revelation, reason, and demonstration, as Mrs. Eddy tells us to do in the sixth chapter, what does it mean for revelation? I still remember a friend of mine telling me once, "It's okay what you teach. I don't mind, you know, it's okay. But please don't keep allude to the fact that that the method is revelation. Everybody will think you're silly." This is a friend at home in Seattle that, you know, isn't as much into the subject as we are. So I said, "How can I not allude to revelation? It's the whole basis of our method of working. We work through revelation, reason, and demonstration. That's perfectly normal." And to other people, when you say we work through revelation, they think we're in this abstract glory realm. But to us, it's concrete being, because the divine, we pray to the divine mind. This same friend said to me, "I never pray." I just think, well, that's too bad for you. Someday you will. That it's such that we can only turn through revelation through knowing that the divine mind is our parent mind. And so let's go to it. Every day we have to know. It's our origin. It's our source. So here in concept building, Max says that since mind is the creator of man, we must recognize God mind as our parent and progenitor. Mrs. Eddy said, "God is the parent mind, and man is God's spiritual offspring." She alludes to the fact in Science and Health that the parent mind, the father mind, matter is not the progenitor of mind. Max says, "The parent mind is also illustrated in the first statement of the Lord's Prayer. For example, in the textbook it says, 'Our Father, which art in heaven.' Mrs. Eddy's spiritual interpretation, 'Our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious.' The recognition that man's family tree is not in ancestors, but in divine mind, enables him to free himself from all human and medical laws of heredity. As the offspring of the all harmonious parent mind, man inherits only divine ideas, never good or evil human traits. In the same way, the parent mind frees us from the belief that we are a product of the past, of tradition, of environment, and so on, and delivers us from all beliefs involving conservatism and class consciousness, not only in its narrow sense of social position, but also in the wider sense of racialism and nationalism. The real man is forever an idea of the divine parent mind." Gee, it's wonderful, isn't it? Just constant building on parent mind frees us from this belief of heredity. I'll just see here for a moment to see if I brought something I may have. I had it in my bag for a moment. I see I didn't bring it. In the paper in Seattle, they're doing a lot with the project on DNA and mapping the whole code of the of a human being. Someday they will have mapped all our genes, and that they will be able to see, then they hope that, for example, some disease of the ancestors has been passed down through the DNA code, and that they hope to be able to find the cause of this laws of heredity on a certain gene in the DNA code. Well, you see, it frees us from all these laws of heredity passed down through DNA in the genes, doesn't it? By knowing that the divine mind is our parent mind. We're free from these laws that they're trying to help us in the human, certainly, because it's a Christ appearing on the human level to help as best as it can to those still within that belief. But we have something higher if we see that the divine mind is our parent mind, as Jesus did, which freed him from the laws of heredity. And it certainly frees us then from all those universal, collective, and individual mythological beliefs that operate on the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious level. All those beliefs that make us sick. And we saw when we took time with the first All is Mental and the Mental is Good and Evil, I wanted to take a lot of time there because not only it's where the world comes, but it's because it's those beliefs that make us sick. And because we spent time with them, we don't like those myths, do we? Because as Carl Jung and his student Joseph Campbell said, what myth are we playing out today, huh? And therefore, these myths surface in unbeknownst to us. And we saw that young officer of 27 years old who was perfectly healthy according to medical treatment, but had a piercing pain in the left heel, a lump in the throat, and a heart pain. And all he was suffering from was the mythological beliefs of women and a bad association with the serpent in women that bit his heel, huh? And so all these beliefs and myths that can surface as sicknesses and aches and pains, and we go to a doctor and the doctor says, you're perfectly normal, and we says, we can't be because there's something wrong with me. I still ache and pain. You see, those we don't like that. The only thing that will free us is our concept building with these ideas. So we already have seen now that we have concept build only with a few ideas. So this evening, as an exercise, I'd like you then to take, if you have a study aid with you or compendiums, just to go over for yourself the rest of the ideas under mind, and then look at the ideas under spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, realizing that we would concept build the same with those ideas, to gain the concept clearly. And then we will go on together into step four and see the next exercise will be, and I'll just anticipate it in step four and anticipate tonight, step four, five, six, seven, eight, and eight as it includes the others. Step three is what we would call the voluminous step. It's the step upon which the others then come very quickly. We spend most of our time in step three. The other exercises are just an outcome of this step. They go very, very quickly. And our work is just a question of polishing and polishing and polishing them. But in understanding, they're understood very easily and quickly. So therefore tonight, concept build, look over the ideas. If you have a compendium, look them over. If not, then you'd have maybe a study aid or a list of them. And see if you can't question yourself through the Socratic method for the different ideas under the synonyms. So you polish your tonality of the spiritual meaning. After you've done that with the ideas under mind, begin to see how the ideas under mind begin to interrelate to give tone mind. That means how a creator can't be a creator unless it's a producer or an origin or an influence. And then how all those ideas give off a tick, tick, tick called mind. Or how under spirit, how all the ideas under spirit interrelate to give off a tone called spirit. And how all the ideas under soul interrelate and give out a tone called soul. And the same with principle, life, truth, and love. That would be an the first exercise for step three is learning the concepts and getting the ideas clearly for the synonyms. Step four is to see how they interrelate to give off tone mind, tone spirit, tone soul, tone principles, tone life, tone truth, tone love. So tonight, anticipate are coming into step four. I just have a few more points to bring out in step three. With step three, I want us to do some exercises, as I say, on other ideas that we can use besides just the ideas under mind. Bring in other terminology that we could use today in the world that we could use for mind. For example, information could be instead of mind. What we could use for spirit, that is in the world today. What we could use for soul or principle, life, truth, and love. And the key there always is that the language of spirit uses another terminology, and that terminology of today is the language of wholeness, and that the language of the ideas always have to be based on the Tsunami principle. It's those ideas and terms in the word that elude back to the whole and the specific. For example, a hologram means that it's always that a hologram can, as a part, contains a whole, doesn't it? So there are terms in the world today that have holistic meaning, cybernetic meanings, structural meanings. They're terms for the synonyms that maintain a holism type of definition. See if you can do it for mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, coming up with a new terminology of today which is holistic in its language, but it wasn't used by Mrs. Eddy, but she would have used it if she was here today. Her textbook would have sounded totally different than it does today. This was written in the 19th century to a religious age. If she wrote that a textbook to an age we're in, she would have given it the same tonality, but she may have called prayer by a different title, Atonement and Eucharist by a different title, but not lose the tonality of it. Or Christian Science versus Spiritualism, these different chapters, she may have given them different titles to talk about what's going on in the world today. But it still would maintain the tonality. She could have. It would have been the same meaning for prayer, the same meaning for Atonement and Eucharist, the same meaning for marriage, the same meaning for Christian Science versus Spiritualism, but with perhaps a different roof category. We don't know. We like the way she has it. We enjoy it. We love it. We think it's exact. But there are possibilities, and we needn't do that today. Work with her chapters, but at least with the synonyms, huh? See if there's any other terms. So that's our homework for the evening.